hear argument now in the case of Potness against Holder.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Hagan.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Shifting gears quite a bit here. This is an immigration case. I represent a client who is an applicant for political asylum. The case was denied. His application was denied by the immigration judge, and that was joined by the Board of Immigration Appeals. It's our position that this case should be remanded to the Board of Immigration Appeals to do a full review. Now, there were a number of errors.
Your motion to reopen is still pending?
Yes, it's pending before the Board of Immigration Appeals. We have heard nothing about that. That motion was based on new facts, which came up after.
No, I understand. Yeah. It's a status question.
Yes, it's still pending. Mr. Potness is a member of an ethnic minority called Kashmiri Pandits, or Pandits. This is a group which resided for thousands of years in Kashmir, which, as you know, was the area between India and Pakistan, which is still a matter of conflict between the two. And his grandparents, as Hindus and Kashmiri Pandits both, were forcibly ejected from Kashmir and during that war in the 1940s.
So, Mr. Hagan, here's my understanding of your argument, and I guess a problem I have with it. You seem to be criticizing the board for somehow conflating Mr. Potness's arguments based on his ethnic background and his political opinion. But what the board did, as far as I can tell, is it looked at the underlying examples of alleged persecution, and it found that they were not severe enough to constitute persecution, period. So it didn't really matter if it was political opinion or if it was ethnic background. It just didn't meet the legal standard, and that's why they said the analysis is identical. That's an element that's common to either type of protected category. So isn't your problem somehow to convince us that these particular incidents that he's talking about really were severe enough?
That is part of our argument, and I will answer that right now, Your Honor. There are several kinds of injury that can be come under the definition of persecution. One of those is physical harm or injury which is inflicted upon someone by either a government actor or someone who is either not controlled by or a government is either unwilling or unable to control. Now, there were two groups, and we'll go past that. They were pursued by Muslims, and that comes into a later argument that we have. And also the Indian government because of their membership in a rights group. Now, to explain the issue of the persecution. Persecution can be physical, as I said, and also psychological. In this case, they were both, is our contention. Mr. Potness joined, along with his father and mother, a group called the BJS. That's a short for a long term. Is a civil rights group, basically, which peacefully demonstrated and argued for rights for Kashmiri Pandits. They were refugees. They had lived in refugee camps for several generations. And he was, during marches, he was attacked, among others, with his group, by the police, the Indian police, with what they called a lati charge, now L-A-H-T-I, is a long.
Counsel,
you're familiar with
it's
that?
It's awfully hard to think of Kashmiri Pandits as a persecuted minority in India if you consider that Jawaharlal Nehru and Indira Gandhi are both Kashmiri Pandits. Gandhi's daughter is the head of the ruling party. The Congress Party is in power in India these days. The idea that Kashmiri Pandits are somehow disfavored in India is very hard to get one's mind around. What would make anybody think that?
Your Honor, two things. Now, politically, based on political opinion, these are not all Kashmiri Pandits. My client is a member of a small group of Kashmiri Pandits which opposes actions of the government of India, regardless of who is in control of the government, because they feel that...
Then I would think your presentation to the board and to us would be that he is a victim of persecution because of his political party, not because he's a Kashmiri Pandit. But your brief emphasizes his ethnic background and religion, neither of which is, given the fact that the Congress Party is in charge in India, a plausible ground of persecution.
Well, our position is this, Your Honor, and it's important because we think that the Board of Immigration Appeals and the judge also conflates these two. There are two separate identities that this family has and that my client has. One is as a political opponent of the Indian government. The Indian government repealed under a law called Protection of POTA Against Terrorism Act because of pressure from Muslims. And this leads us to the other part of his identity, which is as a Kashmiri Pandit, his group feels that they were wrongly expelled from Kashmir, that Kashmir should accept them back, and I'm talking about the Indian part of Kashmir. And he and his family were attacked. And this is separate from the BJS opinion and against the Indian government. They were attacked because they were Hindus, because they were not Muslims, and they did not belong. The Muslim fundamentalists said, you do not belong in our part of the country or anywhere
here.
Of
course, the State Department reports, number one, suggests that persecution is much more in the other direction, Hindus against Muslims and even Christians. And secondly, the board finds that there is a possibility of relocation to an area of India that may not be so vulnerable, I guess, to Muslim discrimination. India is overwhelmingly a Hindu country. And we need to find that the opposite conclusion is compelled, not just that it's possible. So how can we do that?
Well, Your Honor, to complete my point about persecution, I think that's important. I want to get this across, and then I will answer that question. Two psychiatrists and a psychotherapist.
I suggest you answer Judge Wood's question
okay.
now.
Judge, what our claim is that this family is pegged. This family, his father was a leader of this opposition, that this family is pegged as opposing the government and as also being persecuted by Muslims.
So, but let's take the Muslim part. I mean, what is there to say that in some other area of India that's solidly Hindu, they couldn't go to the local police if there was harassment from visiting Muslims who've tracked them down and say, we're being harassed? What is there to make us think the police
will respond?
Well,
Your Honor, right. According to my client, and we have copies, I believe, of this in the record, they did go to several local police as they were fleeing across India in different parts of India, and they made complaints. And the Indian police, first of all, wouldn't accept the complaint, and in another case, they ignored their complaints. And in fact, then, the Indian police turned around, and in several places where they were hiding out with friends or relatives or whoever, they actually came to their house looking for them. When they weren't there, not their house, but where they were staying, they left summonses ordering them to come into the local police station in that area for interrogation. Now, the government has made some arguments that this just, in fact, the immigration judge said, well, that's just coming in, they're coming in to discuss the complaint that they made. Well, the complaint that they made was in a different place, in a different part of India, And also, the word interrogation does not mean something like a polite little chat about some complaint you made. They were ordered to come in for interrogation, which has this feeling, this image of being questioned and investigated.
Are these summonses translated?
Your Honor, the summonses are translated and they're in the record. And one of the things that
I'm just saying to the word interrogation, I mean, if it's in Hindi or if it's in some other language. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the translator. And one of the issues of the summons is that the judge considered them to be these friendly chat interviews. And he, in fact, the judge in several ways has set himself up as an expert in several things. And one of them is he interprets what the summonses are about. And there is a federal document laboratory, which is one of its purposes, is exactly to evaluate and look at documents from other countries. The judge here said, well, it doesn't have a heading on it or something. That's not the way they do summonses in India. How does the judge know? It's the same way that the judge said, well, those experts who said he had this lati hit him on the leg. That's not persecution and doesn't regard the expert statement that it was persecution.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hayes.
May it please the Court, Timothy Hayes on behalf of the Attorney General. In this case, Ponas sought asylum before the agencies, BLOA, based on three incidents of past harm and a purported fear of future persecution in India. Ponas' asylum application received more than ample consideration at the agency level.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Hayes. One of the points that Mr. Hagan, I know, has made in his brief and was starting to make here was that the agency was looking too narrowly at the harm that Mr. Ponas suffered, that there was physical harm, yes, but at the time of these beatings and other events, his psyche he suffered from harm causing him now to have serious mental illness. How does the board take that kind of argument into account? I don't see much talk about it in the board's opinion.
Well, my understanding of that's kind of a continuing persecution argument, Your Honor. It's where you say something that happened in the past has effects into the future, and that should be counted into the past persecution analysis.
Well, at least hypothetically, let's say a particular event that happens to somebody has a devastating psychological impact on them. It happens to soldiers sometimes. You know, they are engaged in one extremely intense confrontation with the enemy. They're under fire, and you know they just snap. You know, they experience PTSD. They experience other psychological injury, and it's definitely traceable to that event. Isn't Mr. Ponas saying something like that happened to him?
Correct. That is the argument he's trying to make. The problem with this argument is twofold. One, there's no state action requirement for two of the three past incidents. He's alleging harm by the Islamic fundamentalists, but as the immigration judge and the board both affirmed, they both concluded that he hasn't shown the Indian government is unable or unwilling to control the Islamic fundamentalists. And the second problem with it is there's no causation element here. If you look at the psychiatrist's letter and the clinical social worker's affidavit, it's either I've read his asylum application or I've read his affidavit, and based on this application and affidavit, I find what he said to be true based on the clinical symptoms. But we have no cause. The second psychiatrist.
So you think the record's just insufficient to link what may be a present mental illness problem with those events that happened back when he happened?
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. Correct.
Although the board doesn't really discuss this. This is your opinion?
Correct. I'm interpreting what the board has said. The board didn't explicitly address it, and I admit that's a problem. It would be nice if the board was clear on the issue. Unfortunately, they weren't. But on the flip side, the board did sort of implicitly discuss it, because the whole point of why we're here arguing an asylum claim is because a judge found that the post-traumatic stress diagnosis excuse his untimely filed asylum application. Otherwise, unless there was a constitutional claim or a question of law, this court wouldn't even have jurisdiction over this
right.
issue.
But, I mean, I thought your point was fine, that, you know, that would be kind of a current events finding, and, you know, why was he late now could be the PTSD, which wouldn't necessarily, I mean, it could, but it wouldn't necessarily tie back into the events in the country.
Correct, Your Honor. And to the extent that they're trying to argue that toward a well-founded fear of future persecution, based on the events that's happened to his brother in India subsequent to his arrival into the United States, there are a number of issues with that. One, he didn't raise it before the board in his board brief, so it's an unexhausted issue. But even if it were exhausted, as the First Circuit held in Oak versus Gonzalez, and I think that's how it's pronounced, it's O-U-K, that goes to your genuine the subjective component of a well-founded fear. It's got two components. So he might genuinely feel this fear, and that's well documented in the record, but it doesn't make it objectively reasonable. The objective reasonable standard is steps away from the person's mind and goes to another person in that situation. And a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress, as the clinical social worker documents in page 8 of her affidavit, one of the symptoms is an abnormal response to a stressor. So it's not necessarily clear that he could have a well-founded fear, an objective reasonable well-founded fear based solely on a medical diagnosis. Panis alleged three incidents of past persecution in India. As I was just saying, two involved Islamic fundamentalists, which the record does not show that they're unable or unwilling to control.
Now, his theory is, though, that the record shows exactly that they tried to complain to the police and the police shrugged their shoulders or just didn't bother to do anything.
Correct, Your Honor.
Which would be enough, you agree, if that's, you know, if people's efforts to obtain government protection are unavailing.
It's hard to say. That's a decision for the board to say and not for me to say.
There's a theory. You'll at least admit that. There's a theory that
there's a possibility.
Unable or unwilling to
exactly.
protect.
I know the board in Manner of OZ, for example, has said that when the person filed three police complaints and the police said, we'll take care of that, and did nothing about it, they found that was sufficient to show that the private actors, the government, was unable or unwilling to control.
Okay.
I don't think that's the issue in this case. There was, in the Kashmiri Valley, there was a first incident where Panis testified that the police absolutely refused to take the report. If you review the State Department record, however, it shows that the police department in that area often refuses to take reports. And I'm not condoning that, but I'm saying that it happens to the citizens of the country as a whole. And I think part of that problem is there's a lot of religious violence in that area of India, and they don't want to cite one religious group against another, so they sort of just wash their hands of the whole thing. Having not established past persecution, Panis bore the burden of proving a well-founded fear of future persecution. A well-founded fear, as I just discussed, it has two components, a subjective component and an objective component. In this case, the board focused on the objective component and held that Panis hadn't demonstrated a pattern or practice of persecution in India. The record doesn't compel the opposite conclusion. There were two police notices left at the door of the family's residences, wherever they happened to be living at the time, since they were...
They were a long way away. I mean, I've looked at this on a map of India. The first notice is a 500-kilometer drive from Mumbai, and the second one is 850 kilometers away. So one could excuse them for thinking that the police were going out of their way to pursue them.
Absolutely. The problem is they bore the burden, or Panis bore the burden of proving that those notices were left out of a desire to persecute them as opposed to some sort of a legitimate reason. And I don't think the board's opinion here is meant to express that they were merely following up on previously filed police complaints. Obviously, that's pure speculation. But the problem is when the party bears the burden of proof, and you can infer from the evidence some reasonable possibilities that don't establish the fact that they want to establish, then they haven't met their burden. And that is what the board was pointing out in this case, as far as the police notices are concerned. Moreover, as this court held in Ahmed versus Gonzalez, a group not being treated well in the country of origin, which I think is a fair assessment of certain groups, it doesn't establish a pattern or practice claim. The board, I believe, cited to Igman Toro versus Mukasey, which dealt with Coptic Christians in Indonesia. And in that record, the two State Department reports documented numerous instances of abuse against Coptic Christians, and this court held that given the high bar necessary to prove a pattern or practice claim, the State Department reports documentation of those instances was insufficient. Such is the case here. In fact, the State Department report, as Judge Wood was just pointing out earlier, mostly suggests that religious motivated violence in India is targeted toward Muslims and Christians, not Hindus, which the religious report presumes the Kashmiri Pandits to be a sect of. In conclusion, because Podnis has not demonstrated that the record compels the conclusion that he holds a well-founded fear of future persecution, the court should deny the petition for review. Withholding requires the applicant to meet the asylum eligibility requirements, but with a higher burden of proof, so the failure to meet asylum means that you automatically fail to meet withholding of removal. Finally, the court should find Podnis' request for protection under the Convention Against Torture waived, having not been addressed in a meaningful fashion in his opening brief. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.